What up, bros?
What up, bros?
And welcome to Bra Meets World.
Well, it's Bra Meets World.
Your boy Meets World fan cast. I am Siege.
And I am Tony Curtis. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. We have a very special episode and a very special guest. Going straight into it, let's talk to you may know him from his YouTube channel, T1J, the one janitor, as he's known on other platforms. But welcome to the show, Kevin.
What up?
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Absolutely. Like, Kevin, what is your relationship with Boy Meets World? We've watched a few of your videos on YouTube, and you had such a great breakdown, which is one of the reasons why we brought here. But like, Tell our audience what your history with Boy Meets World is.
I probably caught it when it first aired, but I was pretty young when it first aired. I think I really got into it in the later seasons. And then definitely when it was the reruns, I like became obsessed with it during those times. And that was like the formative years of my life. And around that time, it was probably like one of my top three favorite shows. And just my love for the show just kind of carried on throughout my life. And every now and then I'd catch a rerun or something. And then when YouTube came out, you know, people would upload clips and I'd watch those clips over and over again. And you know, it all came full circle. And now I'm the one making videos about it. So
awesome.
That's fantastic.
Just a question. What is it about Boy Meets World that made it one of your favorite shows? That's the question I'm always interested in asking people.
I mean, a lot of it is just the time period. Like, I felt like I could relate, I guess, with some of the things that were happening on the show, at least during the reruns. You know, I was about the same age as the characters on the show, so that definitely helped. But I do think it was kind of a unique show, especially compared to like other 90s family sitcoms. It had a little more to it, I think, than a lot of shows. It got like real sometimes, which I appreciated, which a lot of other shows weren't really doing. Like, they kept it all very into the like sitcom, everything's tied up at the end of the episode type of thing. So it was cool that Boy Meets World occasionally stepped away from that.
Absolutely. You know, I think it's really funny to me watching your videos. And they, for those of you who are not watching the YouTube version of this, we are three black men talking about this show. And Kevin, I'm always interested to know, like, how did you feel about the show, or like even like thinking about it now as a black guy watching this show? Like, do you ever ask yourself, like, why is it this particular show I connected with? Or, like, do you ever think about the race aspect of it?
I think about it in retrospect. I think at the time, it didn't really occur to me that much. But, yeah, it's interesting. I'm not really sure. Probably another reason is by the time when I very first got into the show, like I said, was in the later seasons. And, like, Angela was kind of already on the show. I had a huge crush on Angela as a kid.
Of course. As you should. Yeah.
So I think that was part of it too.
You know, I think you brought up something really interesting that I didn't even make the connection for, but Boy Meets World was kind of sandwiched in between other black shows.
Yeah, sure.
So maybe like as black kids, we were like, oh yeah. Like,
yeah, this I think is just they part were of the deal.
I think they were the lead in for Hanging with Mr. Cooper.
Family Matters.
Sister was on for a bit. Yeah. Like, there was a few of them. And so I think the Hughleys was TGIF for like a hot minute. So yeah, that is interesting about how they were able to kind of like really structure the TGIF lineup to kind of embrace a wider audience in that way.
Absolutely. Are you guys ready to talk about this episode?
Yes.
Yes.
You know, one of the things I was talking to Kevin about before we got on was that you know, he did this episode on his YouTube page about Eric's journey, and his perspective of Eric was so unique, because you know, what I was kind of explaining to him earlier was that, you know, our perspective has always been that like Eric is like some kind of neurodivergent. Like, there's something Absolutely. Going on with Yep. Eric that like he's undiagnosed. He has these strengths and weaknesses, and a lot of people are kind of overlooking them. But what Kevin did in his video was kind of showcase how Eric is kind of acting out from a place of trauma, which I just thought was really interesting. And so I'm so excited to have you on this specific episode, because I think this might be the most emotionally packed Eric storyline we get throughout the series. So yeah,
completely agree. Like I was watching this one with like your video in mind, and it was just, it's heartbreaking actually to watch.
It is. It's one of the saddest moments in the whole show.
Absolutely. All right. So it sounds like in order for us to really get into a deep dive, we need to do the tell me about it. Emma, tell me about it.
I do.
Tell us about it. Eric wants to be a dad. But reality hits and things get sad. Meanwhile, Corey considers a new wedding plan. You know what? I like it. I feel like you could have done another like wedding pad. Like there was something else there. Like,
I know. You know what?
Time. Who am I to judge?
Trying to sandwich in the Corey thing into that was hard. There was a lot to discuss in the Corey storyline.
Oh my God.
We'll get there.
I'm so excited. Okay. So for everyone listening, this is season 6, episode 18. Can I help to cheer you? Topanga is in wedding planning mode and persuades Corey into accompanying her, Sean, and Angela to a posh ceremony in the hall of her dreams, where an unhappy father of the bride offers Corey's $1 million to marry his daughter. Corey refuses at first, but then he sees the beautiful bride, his attraction to her, and a daydream about her feeding him grapes on a deserted island wearing a sexy bikini makes him question his love for Topanga. In what I would argue is an A storyline, Tommy pleads with a heartbroken Eric to adopt him so that he would not have to move to California. This causes Eric to pretend that he no longer wants Tommy so that Tommy can be happy with his new family.
Heavy stuff.
Okay, first responses. Kevin, we're going to give you this. Just right off the bat, how do you feel about this episode?
Like you said, you would consider that the A story. It's weird that was the B story of this episode. Like I've like watched this show in full like multiple times recently, so a lot of it's still fresh in my head, but I remember these two plot lines, but I forgot that they were on the same episode. And it's so weird that they're on the same episode because
they need not be.
Yeah, well, one of them is just super sitcom-y and ridiculous, and the other one's like very heart-wrenching. So that was kind of the first thing that stands out. It's like, this is a very jarring juxtaposition of stories.
Could not agree more with that. And, you know, it seems as though every time that Boy Meets World wants to tackle a heavier issue, there's almost like, I call it studio notes. Maybe it's something else, but like this pressure to lighten it. Hey, there needs to be comic relief. We can't just do a straight dramatic episode. Very rarely do they do that without having these kind of like inserts of comedic moments, which sometimes work, but in circumstances like this, it, like you said, it's a very jarring thing to go between like Corey fantasizing about eating grapes on the thing and an orphan pleading for his life to be saved. Like, Jesus, like, it's so intense.
I can deal with the comic relief, but I feel like this the A story or whatever is so like dumb. Like, I don't know.
Dumb is a perfect way to put that, because there's like I almost want to put it on the back burner, but I like that we are acknowledging both storylines, because it does kind of like address one of the, I don't say problems with Boy Meets World, but this whole need to bring in humor when you're having a heavier subject matter. I kind of feel like it takes away, and we would just be better served if we were allowed to sit with kind of like the weight of what's going on, or maybe even explore some of what's going on with Eric. Like, I would have loved for this to just be an Eric-centric episode and kind of deal with all the things that Eric lists that he's going through. Like, when he talks about the different ways in which he feels abandoned, which is what's really funny. It's like, this episode is really about Eric being like, I have nothing, so I will adopt a kid so I at least have someone that I feel like I'm important to, is kind of like the crux of the episode. And it's just like, yeah, let's give him that time to talk about this.
Totally. You know, I have to say, in general, season six is heavy. There is like, there is a lot of heavy episodes between Sean's dad, between the Matthews baby, between this. It's just a lot of heavy stuff. And one of the things I'm kind of realizing, because we're listening to Pod Meets World and they're on seasons two, it's such a different show. Like, it's so different. And like, I can see why people tend to gravitate towards different eras of the show, because, you know, if you were to watch this season and watch season one or two, it just feels like it's something completely other. So I just think, as a, like a first reflection, it's just like, yeah, this is a heavy episode, but it's in line with the series of heavy episodes we've been given to try to flesh out the season.
I think also, I don't remember exactly what the mood was when this first aired, or maybe people cared a lot about Corey and Topanga's wedding at the time. I don't know.
Absolutely. I can tell you right now, that was one of, like, as a child, I have never been more invested than Corey and Topanga's wedding.
So I think that's why we're supposed to like care about this story, even though it's kind of weird and silly. And because it, you know, it's like a multi-episode arc, their whole wedding thing.
Sure. But
it just, looking back at it, I was like, I don't care about this at all.
Well, I think it's because you also like look at like not only the silliness of like what we're talking about, but in some ways you're just like, this marriage, like, you're college freshman, this shouldn't even be on your plate. So, you know, it's very easy to be like, we're dealing with real world shit right here. But
do we want to talk about Eric's thing first, or do we want to talk about Corey?
We're talking about Eric's first. That is going to be main storyline, because that's the heavier one. Really quickly, let's get into a really quick roll call. Again, we say hi to JB Gaynor, who plays Tommy.
Can I just quickly say, I thought he did much better in this episode than he did in the episode where we first were introduced to him in the Christmas episode. When we rewatched it, we were just like, oh, he seems very, very green. In that way that kind of like season one Morgan was, where she had to be fed lines and things like that. But in this episode, I thought he came through with, like, he had to, as in order for this episode to work, he had to come through with that plead of like, save me, and for it to actually be heart-wrenching. So I just thought he did a good job.
Absolutely. I also just wanted to acknowledge that we get Nia Vardalos. I'm so sorry. My big fat Greek wedding is what she's from. That's pretty much all I saw.
What's her name in this episode? Did they give her a name? I just referred to her as like Gallagher, the adoption agent. Oh, Mrs. Gallagher. Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, we start with Eric and Tommy. Like, what I love about this is that it kind of starts in the same way that, like, a relationship would start, where Tommy's like, so we've been seeing each other for a while now. I'm not getting any younger. What are your long-term plans with me? I was just like, oh, this is, like, an interesting approach to an adoption, just to kind of treat it like this, like, dating relationship of, like, are you going to make a move or not? I just thought that was really funny.
Isn't that how the episode begins, is them having that conversation?
Absolutely. Like,
this is what this episode is about.
They dive
what's really interesting to me is, again, why is Tommy at the college common room? Like, it's like, you just allow the, like, I just want to acknowledge how crazy it is that we allow a college student to just pick up an orphan, take him back to a college campus. And just like they're not at Starbucks. They're literally at the school campus.
Take this kid to Chuck E. Cheese.
Supervisor. Yeah, like, it's just so interesting to me. Eric should probably be studying at this point in time, which is another reason of, like, the constant thing of, like, Tommy and Eric being like, well, why can't I adopt him? It's because you're not making wise decisions as is.
I thought that was really interesting, that, you know, in that initial scene where they're kind of talking about their relationship, you know, Tommy said he, like, pleads for Eric to, like, hey, I'm adopt me, are you gonna adopt me or not? Like, I'm the oldest kid at the orphanage.
I'm
like,
really old.
Heavy stuff. And, you know, Eric's response to him is like, oh, of course I can't adopt you, like, there's no way. But somehow between that scene and the next scene that we see him with his parents, he's like, well, why can't I, bro? Like, why not? Like, who are you to tell me I can't? And I was curious to see how you guys felt about that switch between Tommy no and Al and Amy, what do you mean I can't? I'll show you. Like, because it kind of just, to me, came across that he wanted to do it to prove that he could, more so than understanding that it was the right thing to do.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. Or it's, you know, as he says later on, you know, wants to feel like he has someone that needs him, that he he can connect with, because it seems like everyone else is being pulled away from him. And I think it's just him sort of like an impulsive reaction to that situation. You know, he rationally understands that it's a bad idea, but, you know, his emotions are taking over, basically.
Definitely.
I think it's a hybrid. I think it's exactly what both of you said, specifically because when Eric is in the living room with the Matthews, he says to them, I came here for your support, not for your permission. And it's kind of like the fact that they don't give him support, or even, in my opinion, they don't even try to address what Eric has said the other issues are. Like, no one's like, Eric's like, hey, I'm alone. I don't have a place to live. I'm not doing, probably not doing great in college. Like, he says, I lost my brother. I lost you guys. I lost my best friend. I lost the girl who I was interested in. And I'm sleeping on my parents' couch right now. Yeah. Let me take care of this kid. Let me prove that I have some value in this world. And everyone just ignores everything that he just said about everything that he lost. And instead of being like, Eric, we have time for you. We'll make time for you. Your brother's still there. You know, like, any kind of like reassurance, they instead mock him for him not being all there. And he's like, I'm smarter than people are giving me credit for, which has always been the case with Eric.
Kevin, given all that Siege said, I'm interested, how do you feel about the way Alan and Amy approach Eric in general? Because I know you, like, you kind of talked about this in your video a little bit, that you felt like they often kind of minimized his experience. And so watching this episode, what did you think about their parenting?
Yeah, I think that's a common trend throughout the series. And I theorize it's part of the reason why he kind of just goes off the rails. I mean, it's a little bit headcanon, but it makes sense in the context of the show. And I've been trying to catch up on Pod Meets World myself. And Will always jokes about how in the early seasons, they like act as if they don't even have another, you know, another kid. And it just kind of fits the trend, because even when they do talk to him, they don't take him seriously. Well, I mean, it's kind of their responsibility as parents to kind of like pay attention to their kid, I guess. But Eric also has trouble like expressing himself, you know, in a good way. And this is another example of that. But again, they don't recognize that. And yeah, I think it just continues the trend.
Well, I mean, let's be clear. Morgan is basically non-existent right now. Yeah.
Who?
I feel like,
who?
So in general, the Matthews have kind of like started slacking when it comes to parenting. Because don't get me wrong, this kid, clearly it came into the world with a lot of drama. It makes sense that they would be paying very close attention to their newborn child. I'm not saying that they shouldn't be. I'm saying that they do have, even if they're not attending to Eric, their oldest, they do have a second youngest child who is still in, nurturing mode. She still needs to be parented, and she's nowhere around. So I feel like maybe, like, as much as we love Alan and Amy, they just kind of drop the ball. Because to your point, you said that Eric like doesn't communicate, but this particular episode, he very much communicates what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they just laugh at him.
It's interesting when you kind of look back at all the times that Eric has kind of sought attention from his parents and, you know, trying to prove his independence, trying to prove his worth, trying to prove his intelligence. And, you know, as goofy as he is, one of the things I do like about what Alan said in this episode is Amy's like, he just pulled his shirt through his zipper, and Alan's like, no one else could do that. And it's almost like, well, thank you for finally like giving this kid credit and understanding that like he has a very unique understanding of the world. This is why I do feel like that neurodivergent storyline, like that makes a lot of sense to me. And the idea that like his parents didn't understand the ways that he was intelligent, the ways that he learned best, he struggled in school so much, like there was just a lot to kind of support the idea that he had a learning disorder or something. But I mean, I'm sure that can also be true with this idea that he's not getting attention from his parents. Like both of those ideas could be what's going on. And of course, we're just throwing a lot of meaning onto this show that I'm sure they didn't think about. But the thing is that you can't write what you don't know. So we're getting some bits of truth from these writers. Some like real personal stuff is being conveyed through the story somehow. So it's not like this stuff is coming from nowhere. Like we're obviously pulling from something that is feels so true for us as fans after absorbing the entirety of the show, you know?
Yeah, I will say when I was making my video about Eric, when I first started, I was like, so I have the general idea. I might have to jump through some hoops, but it was surprising how well it all fit together, which makes me think that maybe the writers were thinking about some of these things, you know, maybe they didn't necessarily bring it to the forefront, but it does. It is a pretty clean thread, I think.
Sure.
Absolutely. I think like just to kind of talk about the headcanon that we have of Eric that we have spoken about on this show. Me specifically, I feel like Eric's like an idiot savant. He's one of those people where it's just like his true skills and his true talents just haven't always worked out with capitalism or with like the standard way of living, which is why he's always seen as a failure or as like someone who didn't quite live up to it, because Eric still keeps those milestones in his mind, like wanting to go to college. That was something that Eric wanted to do, but it's like maybe college wasn't ever really for you, because we've seen how much he struggles with test taking and with schoolwork. They also show in the series itself that he's really intelligent. But, you know, like he has like that whole Rain Man episode where he can just play cards and he can, you know, count cards and all this other stuff. And
they do that a few times throughout the series. They'll just randomly make it so he can guess lottery numbers or some random bullshit.
Exactly. And it's like, oh, yeah, Eric has a form of intelligence. Just the traditional way isn't where he responds at. And so knowing that Eric struggled to even get into college, yeah, it would not surprise me if Eric was struggling in college right now. And again, it's probably not a place best for him, but very much like getting into college, he still has the milestone of I want to be a parent. I would make a great parent. And so that's what he's fighting for. He's fighting for these milestones without really having the pathway that's right for him to get to them.
I was so surprised that no one, and of course they can only fit so much in, but if they didn't have that stupid Cory and Topanga storyline, maybe they could have. I was surprised no one brought up season 4, episode 18, Uncle Daddy, the episode in which Eric is dating a girl who has a son. And she's like, hey, are you sure that you want to sign up for this? And he's like, yeah, I'm into it. And then he takes the kid out and he like loses him because he wants to play pool with Sean and Cory or whatever. And then it just kind of fizzles out from there. But it was this moment where Eric was like, I'm ready to be a dad. And then it circles back again and no one references it, not even him. So I just thought it would have been something. Obviously, the show has a lot of continuity issues, but these storylines mirror each other so much that it seemed odd for them not to bring it up.
Yeah, I was going to be like, you can't expect them to remember characters they wrote.
Yeah, before I rewatched the show, those episodes like ran together in my mind. I forgot there was a whole different kid.
Yeah, that's so true.
I thought Tommy was that kid when we first watched it. I was like, oh wait, but I feel like this is the perfect example of how, like, to me, it would make way more sense for Eric to become a teacher.
Yeah.
It would make way more sense for Eric to kind of like, for someone, maybe Mr. Feeney, to be like, Eric, you seem to really connect with children. You seem to really want to be there and support them. Maybe the best way for you to be a parent is to have a classroom of kids of your own, you know? Like, there are different ways of doing that. And then that would give Eric this, like, new career path and this new story arc to move towards. But it just feels like, much like we were saying, the family didn't really care. The writers didn't really care to think about what is Eric's motivation? What's his arc? Where could he go from here? What kind of person are we telling this story about?
You brought up him being a teacher, and I just want to point out that also reminds me of that episode. I think it's like season 5 where Eric teaches Feeney's citizenship class. Yeah, and he does a great job. he teaches them in an unconventional way, and they end up learning a lot. And we kind of joked at the time, like, how dare Feeny, like, you know, gamble the citizenship of these immigrants in the hands of this kid. But he really took to it really easily, and he clearly had a knack for it. So to your point, I totally see him becoming a teacher way more so than Corey Matthews. Yeah, so Eric kind of gets excited about this idea, and then he finds
saying
out that Tommy...
it in front of, here's the thing, saying in front of the kids, yeah, like that was the thing, when they were like, hey, you know what, maybe I'll adopt Tommy, because I don't need him to be on the other side of town. Like, again, a very... understandably, but like a very selfish mood, but in front of the kids. And when Mrs. Gallagher is like, maybe we should have this conversation in my office.
That was a sign that he wasn't ready, that he was absolutely willing to say that in front of a desperate orphan, that like, oh, I'll take him home, knowing it's so much more complicated than that.
Is it? Again, they let him just leave the kid out every once in a while. When he said, I'm going to go see if I can put Tommy on layaway, I was like, amazing. I mean, apparently.
That whole scene at the orphanage or whatever, I wouldn't say it's like hard to watch, but it is, you feel something.
You know, I do want to say, because like, yes, it was irresponsible for Eric to say that in front of Tommy. It was irresponsible for him to really go as far as he did with the adoption thing. But to Alan's point, he's like, he has a good heart. It's not that he doesn't want to. He's not capable, but it's not from a lack of desire. And I think that there was like a genuine place where he was like, I truly want this. And I don't think he was able to understand that he was kind of using this to fill that internal hole that he felt from being abandoned, even though that was clearly the case. But I do think he just genuinely wanted to care for this kid, because he felt like he saw a lot of himself in this kid who was abandoned. And I think that's the relationship that kind of formed that bond. He was like, I don't want to abandon this kid. I feel abandoned. I know what that feels like. How can I be there for him?
I have a friend who's a social worker, and I would love to ask her just kind of like how some things happen with Mrs. Gallagher, because I do feel like, first of all, that kind of bonding that Tommy has with Eric can't be healthy. Like I can't imagine that's like a good, healthy relationship, even for the child to have, be that invested in someone like Eric, who has no real way or potential of adopting him. Like, the adoption agency has to know this to some extent. And then the idea that Mrs. Gallagher can see the desire for Eric to adopt him, but to say, hey, I'm not allowed to show you these files, but I think that by showing you these files, you'll be able to understand what Tommy will lose out on if you try to hold on to this.
Yeah, I really love that, like, really Eric's arc comes down to, we know you love Tommy, but how much do you love him? Do you love him enough to do what's best for him?
To white fang him?
Yeah. Like, do you love him enough to give him up for his betterment? Which is such like a heavy conversation point. It's a heavy thing to throw on someone. Like, I love that Eric was challenged in that way. And obviously he felt that, oh, I want Tommy around, I want to do it. But to be confronted with that line of just like, how much do you love him though? Really, like, I just thought, by the way, Will Friedle's acting in this episode, incredible. Like, this dude could have easily led a spinoff series. He has the comedic chops, he can do dramatic work. Like, I was just, you know, we've seen so much goofy Eric this season that I just loved seeing him in this dramatic role, and especially to get something with so much substance of like having to love a child enough to give them up for their betterment. It's a heavy thing. So he did really well with that, is all I'm trying to say.
And there aren't too many dramatic Eric moments after this. In the show, so
okay. Yeah. See, you guys have looked ahead. I don't know that, but that kind of makes me sad, because Will Friedle does a really good job in this moment. Like, I'm not gonna lie, I got teary eyed, but I got teary eyed because it was so funny having watched your video, having watched this episode. I really, and having like been on the journey with Eric this season, I really did see someone who was like reaching out for connection and purpose, and to see him have to give that up because it's the right thing to do. It is heartbreaking. And like, it's written all over Will's face. And it was tough to watch, which I don't consider myself a very emotional person when watching television. But this one, I was like, oh, you got me. I can feel that pain.
100%. 100%.
Again, I do want to say that when we talk about the scene of him being like, I'm not going to adopt you, I was like, okay, again, I love the intent, but this shows that you are not prepared to be a parent. Like, the white fanging a kid is just being like, I don't want you. Go away. I was like, that's not what you do to a child. This is trauma in the making. And I love that they like eventually have Tommy come back and like redeem Eric almost. So you, like, the last scene we see with Eric and Tommy isn't this kid being like, I'll go to California where someone does love me. Yeah. It's like, that has scarring potential all over the place.
That's interesting that the way you said that, because I always thought of it like he realized that there was kind of nothing that he could say that would make Tommy feel better. So he realized he had to just be like, I'm not going to adopt you, that sort of thing. Like, I kind of saw it as like tough love type of thing, but it is, you know, that is kind of a traumatic way to do it.
No, I got it. I knew it was tough love, but I'm like, this is an orphan kid.
Yeah.
If I'm trying to make sense of it from Eric's perspective, because you're right, it's very harsh. But I think in that same way of Eric feeling like, oh, I have no one else, so I need to seek family, I think he felt like in order for Tommy to actively choose another family, he had to feel like there was no other option. And so, again, probably could have communicated things a little bit more clearly, probably could have been a little bit more sensitive and took the time to explain it in a way he could understand. But ultimately, like Alan says, like, he meant well.
Or pull Miss Gallagher in here and, you know,
have a professional do it.
Professional, and you guys both talk about how, even though this may be hard, he'll still have access to Eric. What I really liked was, we love when the letters stop.
And I just want to say, to your point, like, she, forgive me because I don't remember the actress's name. She does a great job. Like, the episode, like, Eric's evolution kind of depends on her performance and the way that she's able to sell that, hey, when the letters stop, that's a good thing. Like, all of that plays such a huge role in Eric kind of getting to the point he needs to get to. And her performance, I think, is the thing that kind of really drove it home. Like, she did great. Will did great. The kid did great. Like, all of them are doing fantastic performances in this episode.
Kevin, anything else you want to say about like this Eric Tommy storyline?
The argument of my video about Eric is that this experience is kind of what broke him. It's kind of like his first real opportunity to find some meaning or find someone to connect to, and that it just all like blows up in his face, and he's just not the same after this. That's when you look at it from that context too, and continue to watch the show, if you think about it that way, it's even more heartbreaking.
I never, you know, just from someone who does remember, because I know Siege is a little like unsure about what the future holds for Boy Meets World. Your theory about this being the thing that breaks him, I want to keep that at the forefront of the conversation as we go forward, because I think it's such a good point. And especially when we get to season 7, Eric, who is a completely different beast. Like, I want to remember everything you're talking about how he has been beaten down. He didn't get to go to college with his friends. He was a townie and he felt like unworthy. He couldn't get a job as a weatherman. He couldn't, like, there were so many times he wanted to be more and he got like beat up by life. And clearly it's taking a toll on him. And we just have to see the way it's going to flesh out. But I definitely want to remember that going forward.
Absolutely. Like, I think your, and listeners, we will link to the video that we keep referring to in the show notes. But like, I think your video is so interesting to me because it actually did make me see all the events leading up to this moment. And I would love for our listeners to kind of like let us know if like they agree, because this just feels like such a pivotal moment in his character, and to hear that he gets no more like dramatic moments after this, and knowing, I don't know much, but I do know we get wacky Eric in a little bit. It's kind of interesting to be like, oh wait, what if he was just literally having a breakdown that entire time, and then everyone's just like, oh Eric, and you're like, you guys, we should really be talking about Eric.
It seems as though he only got attention for being comic relief, and he at a certain point gave up trying to be anything else, and it's really quite heartbreaking to kind of think of it in that context.
Are we ready to move over to the what was supposed to be A storyline but we're gonna call B storyline?
Yeah, I think so. I just, again, I want to say that the entire scene with him pulling the shirt through the pants, I just thought was like, oh, I was like, damn, this dude is incredible. Like, that is such a funny gag, and he pulls it off so well. And even though there's a lot of drama, like, that, those are the moments to insert humor and trusting his performance, not shoehorning in a storyline that really doesn't have anything to do with the A storyline. But yeah, we can move on.
Absolutely. I will say, and as you both have said, I love that they acknowledge not everyone can do that. it's a talent in and of itself. Okay. So Corey, Topanga, and this wedding. All right. I want to say right off the bat, Kevin, you don't know this. I'm planning a wedding right now. And the idea of people coming in like, oh, people do it all the time. I was like, let me tell you right now, the amount of money I'm paying per person, if people just showed up, oh, I'm recognized. Who are you? Who do you know here? Like,
I think it's the idea of crashing the ceremony and not the reception. But to your
point, they were eating stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, they were. There's a bunch of food.
Yeah, the whole time I was like, what kind of wedding is this? Like, I mean, I've been to a handful of weddings, but they're like standing around, they're like standing up during the wedding, they're like talking to the bride before she walks down the aisle. Like, what is going on?
And that's another thing, like, this is supposed to, or this is painted as, and everyone please, like, we know it's a sitcom, but I'm just saying, you painted this as a really nice banquet hall, filled, like, this guy is a millionaire, apparently he can just give away millions of dollars, and yet it's such a small wedding where we actually get to the ceremony that you can count the number of people who are actually attending. Of course they were going to be found out, and they are not being inconspicuous at all.
I think we have to acknowledge white privilege when we're talking about crashing weddings, because like, even the concept of like the movie Wedding Crashers only works when you're a generic white man that people aren't going to be paying attention to. If my black ass showed up at an all white wedding, people are going to be like, so how do we know you? What's going on? Wait. I'm just curious. Like, I thought that was just really funny. This idea that they could just easily play it off and like, no one's asking questions about it.
When I go to places that I'm actually invited, I get stopped, and service people will be like, this is a private event. I'm like, I was invited here. I'm on the list.
You know, the big thing I have an issue with in terms of how they're approaching Corey and Topanga's wedding is this. I mean, obviously Corey makes a speech at the end about how like it isn't about all of the frills and everything. But why take Corey to a wedding like that? Why would he go and get ideas if you know it's something that's outside of what you can afford? It feels like that house hunter thing of being like, yeah, our budget is $2 million, but this house is $8 million, but like, it's nice. It's like, why put that pressure on you when you know you can't? Like, I don't know. It just seems like this is not Topanga Lawrence, who has a sister named Nebula, who wears a robe to school. Like, this isn't that person. This is someone who's obsessed with wedding culture and the commercialism of it and things that have nothing to do with the wedding.
Well, not only that, I think to your point, one of the things that was interesting to me as someone who's planning a wedding is they do talk a lot about everything that Topanga says in the first scene, where it's like, we have to pick this, we have to do that. We don't get to pick a wedding date, which I thought was like a little weird. Like, you pick a wedding hall and they give you a wedding date. That's not how we roll over here, but you know, you do you. But she's right that there's a lot of work that goes into a wedding. And I think the real core of this, even they kind of hint at it, is Topanga is like, I don't want to do this all myself. Like, planning a wedding is a lot. And we need to go into this aware of how much we're actually taking on. But I completely agree with you where it's like, you can't afford this type of wedding. What are you doing? Like, you guys aren't saying, hey, take a look at what they're doing and let's figure out a way to do it more affordably. You're like, take notes of what you like and what you don't like. And you're like, this is $1 million wedding that you guys are talking about. And
I think it's probably supposed to cost more than $1 million because Stan, the plumbing man, offers Corey $1 million just to take on his wife. So it seems like he has plumbing money to spare.
Absolutely. Okay. Really quickly, that brings me to, I do want to talk about going back to our roll call. We get Richard Portnow, who is Stan, the plumbing man, who I really did enjoy his back and forth.
Another great performance. Yeah.
We get Scott and Stevens as Eddie, who is the groom, who I'm not going to lie, I was like, Jesse could probably do better than this guy. I was like, he looks like he's way older and she is out of his league. That gives us Marcy Brickhouse. Her name is literally Brickhouse. as Jesse. So yeah, what were the other responses that you guys had to this whole storyline?
I felt like this whole thing, it seems like it was like a joke. Like one joke that they just stretched out for a whole arc or whatever. Like, it's like, you know, what if they go to this wedding and this guy tries to pay him to be the groom? And that's the joke. And that's the whole thing. And they just kind of trying to stretch that out to be the main story of the show, I guess. I don't know. The whole thing just seemed really silly. I don't know if I was supposed to take it seriously or if it was just supposed to be another silly sitcom thing. I don't know.
I thought it was interesting that they decided to do this indecent proposal type of thing of like, here's $1 million. And they never tied it back to this pressure that Topanga's giving Corey to like financially like come through with like all of these wedding plans. Like, to me, that would have been a better tie-in to be like, the only reason I would even consider this is because I'm so desperate for finances for Topanga, like to put on this wedding of her dreams. Like, I thought that would have been a better way to tie it in versus just the humor of Corey being tempted at the idea of giving up everything and like kind of having serious conversations, so much so that he interrupted a wedding he was not invited to.
One thing I want to talk about is Sean's reaction to this offer, because I think you cannot deny that someone like Sean, growing up completely financially unstable, would be like, you take the money.
We all love Topanga, take the money.
Exactly. Like, I think that was hilarious. And even so much so, like the scene where Sean goes up to Stan is like, look, I'm willing to do it, and Stan's like, I'll pay you to go away. And Sean takes that as a win. He's like, yo, I got $20 out of this.
Yeah. It reminded me so much of, again, going back in time a little bit, season 4, the Christmas episode, Easy Street, where Corey works for the mob. And he's like, I can't do this anymore. And Sean's like, give me that money. I'll sign up. Like, Sean is so willing to like do whatever it takes Sean to get the bag. And like, it makes sense. It makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense to me.
I was getting some kind of like Italian mob vibes from Stan the puppy man.
Yeah, and you know, the idea that like he's talking about selling his daughter to someone he met 5 minutes ago.
Let me tell you some of the lines that come out of this second storyline. They're all lovely with the lights off. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow. She'll love who I tell her to love, talking about his daughter. Mm-hmm. Wow. Corey, I have a girl over there. Stan, who doesn't?
Yeah, I have a girl over there on the side.
Who doesn't? Again, it's this thing where I'm like, what are we doing? And why are we doing this?
When he says stuff like that, like I could see if they made him out to be like this villainous character, but I think he's supposed to be kind of endearing, you know?
Yeah.
Even though he's doing all this, you know, saying all these heinous things.
All right, so I do want to say we've really gone down this rabbit hole in terms of like Corey and the carrot, which again, let's just talk, 1.2 million is a pretty big carrot to dangle, so much so that Corey's arm involuntarily shoots up. Now I want to talk about this involuntarily shoots up, which is the dad. Of course, Corey makes a really big scene. The dad and him's like, hey, listen to this guy, he has something to say. I want to remind you, this is while they're at the altar. Yeah. Corey's like, I guess I should say something. No.
you don't. You were not invited.
Absolutely not. Like this is so inappropriate. And then so much so, he makes this huge speech where he's like, Eddie, Jesse, I hope that you have what me and Topanga have one day. It's like, dude, this is not your wedding. We don't know who you are.
What's a Topanga? Like, we don't know the context of any of this. You were not invited. If someone who was invited stood up and gave a speech during the middle of the ceremony, would also be inappropriate. Like, it's just, it's.
And then he goes, this is their day, we'll have our day. No, this is your day now. If you think that anyone's talking about anything else for the rest of the ceremony, they're talking about the strangers who were at the wedding and made a scene during the ceremony.
Can you imagine a couple of 18-year-olds coming to your wedding and telling you, I hope you have what we have one day.
Yeah, like ridiculous. Like, oh my God, that's so funny. 18 years old just being like, one day you guys will have this old, long-lasting relationship that we college freshmen have.
Oh my God. That's a really good point. Do we even find out how old Jesse is? Like, I mean, I'm not gonna lie, Eddie looks mad older. And I was how old?
Eddie's a teacher, so he's clearly at least in his 20s or 30s. She looks like she's in her 20s. We don't really get a lot of info on them, and honestly, whatever, it's all filler storyline anyway. Really, the only thing we know is that he's a teacher. He's a grade school teacher.
Talking about the class issue thing, there is, again, it's just like, oh, you're a teacher, and don't get me wrong, teachers do not get paid a lot. But, like, I just feel like it's really upsetting for him to kind of degrade someone who's a teacher on a show that's, like, glorified teaching.
Yeah, you know? That's interesting. Honestly, what a piece of work this father-in-law is. Like, you don't want to be anywhere near that. You don't want to be involved with that kind of dynamic. Like, that seems very toxic.
Absolutely. And again, we do not meet Jesse's mother, because why would there be another woman in this?
No. We only have the supermodel daughter, and that's it. Yeah,
absolutely. You guys have anything else to say?
I have a few things I wrote down that I just thought were really funny. I like when Corey is talking to Stan for the first time. He jokes about how Feeny's been his teacher for his entire life. Ain't that funny? I just thought that was interesting that the show's kind of making fun of itself in that way. I love Ryder and Ben's humor and their comedic timing this episode when they're having that like quiet conversation in between Topanga. She's going back and forth. I thought that was hilarious. When Sean sits down and Corey's like, did you see the bride? And he's like, oh yeah. It was funny to me. Like, their dynamic. Their chemistry and comedic chemistry. Like, it's a shame that they don't have more kind of time to play with that a little bit more, because things have gotten so heavy, because they really have such a natural chemistry after working with each other for so long, that I just thought that they had a lot of really funny moments. And I also thought it was funny that Corey said he would buy a Volvo, and that just that was the thing that made Stan be like, you're the guy trying to keep my daughter safe with the airbags.
Yeah, I was gonna say, even though it's a weird, silly storyline, it was funny. It's entertaining.
It is. It was just, I will say, Stan's character, the things that Stan would say, is what really took me out of it. Overall, it was fun. And it was nice to see them all dressed up, like seeing Angela and Topanga just going around being the wedding. Again, it's supposed to be incognito, don't make a scene. Whatever wedding coordinator suggested that they go there is being fired.
She should be. Oh my God. If I found out. See, I'm just going to say this. Obviously, you're planning your wedding. If an 18-year-old who you did not invite showed up and just tried to school you on love, or just even just interrupted your wedding, how would you feel about that?
We're burning something down. I'm telling you that for sure. That's so much fun. Okay. I will say that. For me, like, we're kind of getting into like the Feeny lessons, but I do think that these episodes kind of mirror each other. So I guess I'll just start. What would you guys say is the Feeny lesson of this episode?
Well, interesting. I just popped into my head. Interesting connection between both storylines is people sort of being in over their heads and trying to do something that they're not ready for. Like, maybe that's part of the lesson, is either understanding when you're not ready to dive into something, or knowing when to support people who are in that position. I don't know, something like that.
No. I mean, I think, like, I wasn't thinking about that, but that's, in over your head is definitely something that I would take away. T, what's your...
Yeah, I think there is something to that because, you know, in the Eric storyline, you have him choosing what's best for Tommy over himself. And then theoretically, in the Corey storyline, you have him choosing what's best for the other couple over the selfish need to make a profit and destroy the relationship that he claims is his everything. I'm kind of curious about what the hell Can I Cheer You Up, like the title of this episode means. I don't feel like it fits with either storyline. That just kind of threw me off. But, you know, I think overall, probably the biggest lesson is what the agent says to Eric, which is, how much do you really love him? Like, do you love him enough to let him go? Like, I feel like that's probably the theme that has the most meat on it in terms of how you can apply it in your personal life and how they used it in the story. I just thought that was probably the better one.
To kind of blend both of yours, mine was like, love takes sacrifice. You know, like sometimes, like both episodes, like, we're giving up what would have made you like immediately happy and kind of sacrificing that for like what you knew was the right thing to do.
Sure. So, sure.
Do you have a bruh moment of this episode?
It's like the whole A story.
yeah, absolutely. No, I absolutely agree with that. Do you have like any specific?
I mean, I guess just Stan just selling his daughter to the first person that called him sir. Like, he was ready to like commit to her life to this man based off of one conversation and invest money into ruining a day that she clearly had been working hard for and planning, and just like all of it, just all of it.
Absolutely. I was gonna say, like, you're right, Stan is a walking talking bro moment. Yeah. I will not get over it. They're all lovely with the lights off. Like, I was like, wow.
Yeah,
this is your daughter, sir.
Daughter, right? Like,
okay, what grade would you give this episode?
I would probably give it a B. I think the Eric story is great. I think it's one of the most memorable things on the show and one of the most memorable scenes on the show, him you know, giving Tommy up. And I've trashed the other story, but it was entertaining, but it was just a little just too sitcom-y and out of touch with reality, so it kind of undercut what I thought was like a pretty perfect Eric story. So I'll give it a B. It's kind of in between.
I'm gonna give it a B for the exact same reasons. I loved Eric's storyline. I loved a lot of the performances in this episode. I thought the B storyline, though irrelevant, was entertaining enough. And I thought they missed an opportunity of having an A episode by not just having an Eric focused episode throughout. Siege?
Absolutely. I'm gonna say right along with you guys. I'm gonna give it a B. I feel like it's the highs are really high, specifically with the acting, with Eric's storyline and kind of all the things to be addressed. And the lows, even though they are low, they're fun. Yeah. You know, Corey, Sean, even Topanga, everyone's kind of pulling their weight. It's a really fun thing to watch, even if I was kind of disturbed with the messages that we were getting. So I felt like it was a B is fine.
Sure.
All right. And that has been it. All right. So homework. This is the time. Kevin, do you have any recommendations? Obviously, they should check out your channel. But anything else you want to promote, including, whatever else you're working on?
I'll just plug my channel. It's called T1J. You can just type in T1J. You'll find it. And I make video essays, commentary about these days a lot of media and pop culture, but I used to also talk about politics quite a bit, but just things that are interesting, just interesting stories, interesting ideas. T1J.
Do you have any homework?
You know, obviously, you know, we're recording these episodes a little out of order, so I'm sure this is going to be a few weeks old when we finally release it. But I just saw the premiere of The Last of Us on HBO.
Yes. Yep.
And I thought they did a great job. Like, honestly, like, I was thoroughly entertained throughout the entire thing. I know nothing about the game that it's based off of. I know very little about, like, the world that they're building, but in terms of just like watching that pilot, like it gave me like the like Walking Dead type of, oh, this is going to be a show I'm going to get into. So like, again, only saw one episode, thought it was really interesting. The way they do zombies, or the way they do the infected people in this, is so interesting, because compared to typical zombie lore, it isn't a virus and it isn't like a zombie bite. It's fungus. It's fungus that is growing inside of them, taking over their brains from the inside out. And what I love was, you know, the evolution of zombies has come a really long way. When you watch like, you know, Night of the Living Dead, it's just kind of this walking thing. And then you get to like, you know, the 2000s and the Dawn of the Dead, where they're running full sprinting. Like, even though they're running, they're still aware of like, there's a door here, there's a wall here. In this show, they don't give a damn about anything. They are hopping and like crawling and like chasing people like animals would chase someone, in a way that's so terrifying to me and so interesting that I really was like, oh, this is an original take on something that I thought had been done to death. So for that reason alone, I'll recommend it.
I completely agree. Like The Last of Us, I watched the pilot episode as well, and I felt that it was such a fresh take on zombies, and one that kind of made more sense to me. Sure. It's like, how did no one think about this previously? Because I feel like this is one of the more logical ways of getting zombies in the real world that I've heard in quite some time. So yeah, absolutely agree with you there. Really should check out The Last of Us, and at this point in time, you know.
Yeah, it's probably huge now, but yeah.
Talking about what you both were like, just kind of like catching up on stuff and things on streaming service, I checked out The Invitation on Netflix. It's a horror movie. The vampire movie.
I saw it in theaters, yeah.
I'm going to tell you right now, is it a good movie? No, not really. But is it a fun movie? I had such a fun time. I've really been on like this whole Black people in horror streak. Like, I think it's a very fun thing to put us in. I also think it's very interesting to see when the Black characters are actually Black. Sure. And when they're just like cast with a Black person.
Yeah.
Because there's a very big difference between how Black people would act in a situation and then Black people just being present during a situation.
Sure.
But I don't know. I had fun with it. And so I just encourage you guys to like keep checking out stuff like The Invitation. Watch good, bad movies. Like, I just think it's fun. It's how you get diversity in film, because there's enough of like cookie cutter stuff that I feel yeah. like whenever something does try to take on a new take on an old story, I find it fun and thrilling.
You know, I don't really want to recommend this, and I won't go too far into it, but Siege, I really recommend you watching, if you have access to Peacock, there's a movie that Kevin Williamson, the writer of Scream, wrote called Sick. Okay,
you know how I feel.
And it's basically like Scream, but it takes place during the pandemic, and instead of like a mask, it's literally like the surgery mask. And like that feeling of like being in the grocery store and everyone is wearing a mask and a hoodie and you can't really see anyone, and like playing really into like the fears of the pandemic, but like mixing it into like that Scream type of horror movie, I just thought was really interesting, and I would love for you to watch it and see what you think.
That's okay. You got me with the premise alone. Okay, so thank you so much, Kevin, for joining us.
Yeah, for real, super dope to have you on, man.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. It was super fun. It was great. Thanks for having me.
We appreciate it, and we also we'll recommend our listeners to your videos. You have two that we think are really important. We've talked a lot about the Eric being the tragedy of Eric's storyline is one of them. But I also think our listeners should check out the doomed romance of Angela and Sean. I thought that was a really great one. All right. Thank you guys so much for listening to Brad Meets World. Remember, you can find us on Spotify, iTunes, Apple Music, all the places. Please leave us a rating. You guys have gone back and left us ratings. We completely appreciate that as well. You can find us at Brad Meets World on all of the places. And I guess now would be a good time to tell you guys to dream,
to try,
and do good.
And yeah! Do good! Later, bro. When the spawn meets world.